And welcome to another installment of Mercenary Musings Radio, an exclusive audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. And Mickey, you know that with the chosen topic being copper, we're doing a full circle with today's show, going back to the focus of the first show that you and I did, the debut of Mercenary Musings Radio, way back in January.
It's hard to imagine that time flies so fast, Rob. We're in mid-Q2 right now, and the copper market's changed. I just returned from southern Peru, where I visited a giant copper project with one of my favorite newsletter writers, Otto Rock. He writes Inca Kola News, and if you've ever been to Peru, you know what Inca Kola is. But I'll tell you that there's no fluorescent yellow bubblegum soda pop routine with this guy. He's a straight shooter. Very enjoyable trip.
Okay, well, let's turn the clock back, Mickey, to that initial program. You stated at the time that conditions were ripe for a correction in the price of copper. The price has pulled back a bit since then. Have you changed your opinion at all of the conditions out there right now in the copper market?
No, not at all. You know, I predicted a correction in mid-January. I was surprised because how shallow and short it was. It was a 20% correction over the course of 5 weeks. So I think the shortness of it surprised me. When we talked last about copper, the fundamentals, supply-demand fundamentals, were really messed up. Made no sense at all. The curious case of copper, number one. There was Chinese stockpiling and hoarding and hedge fund specs, which really drove the price up to the mid-$3 range in early Q2, and then we had the correction, which was fairly easy to predict.
Well, how have market conditions and fundamentals changed then over the past 4 or 5 months? Do you think there's still evidence that the price at today's level is too high?
Well, today's level, you know, we've had another correction. So from a low in mid-February, which was the correction I predicted, we had an uptick till about April 15th. We hit a high of 360, which is, geez, it must be about a three-year high, something like that, a two-and-a-half-year high. And since then, it's been down, down, down since. There's three reasons that people in the know think this has happened. Chinese monetary policy is tightening, the Grecian debacle, and we all know about that. And then the Aussie proposed windfall tax on major miners, which could severely affect the supply of copper. But that's knocked the copper price down considerably.
Do you think there is still further downside risk in this copper
price?
Well,
I do, and let me give you some statistics about that. The London Metal Exchange stocks are down about 2.5%. You know, we had this curious thing where warehouse stocks are going up and the price is going up, and that's not normal. But what we see in China is that the Shanghai exchanges are almost double what they were when we first talked. So there is a lot of copper overhanging the market. So the LME stocks are down 60,000 tons. The Shanghai stocks are up 95,000 tons. So there's more copper in warehouses now than there even was when we predicted the correction in late January, or actually predicted it in written form in mid-January. Now, this is the construction peak season in China, so it's a little curious what's going on here. It makes me neutral to slightly bearish in the short term for copper.
Of course, there's a real debate, too, isn't there, over just how much of a demand there is for copper in China, how much they really need, given those bulging warehouses and those big stockpiles of copper. I've read some analysts' report talking about Chinese demand growth for copper expanding by 7% this year. Does that sound like a number that is reasonable to expect, Mickey, or do you think that might be a little bit too high?
Well, I think certainly people in the know, the analysts that really study the copper market, I think they expect a major downturn in copper consumption this year in China. There's what I saw in my research is predicted 7% increase in Europe, U.S., and Japan, but that's more than offset by decrease in demand in China.
Well, that euro figure is, I guess, I don't know, I wouldn't hope that that is written in ink, because when that situation in Europe is a fluid situation, it's changing every day. So, my goodness, that's certainly one area of the world that we have to keep an eye on. But talking about the price of copper, you mentioned that it has retreated. In fact, it's just, you know, not too far off its lowest level in about 9 weeks, I believe, but still over $3 U.S. a pound. And at $3 plus a pound, the copper miners can still make a pretty darn good buck, can't they, on mining a metal that is trading at that price?
Oh, yeah. It's analogous to gold. You know, I've said if you can't make money at $900 gold, then get out of the gold business. Same thing with copper. $3 is a very robust price. Probably the average cost of production all in, in the world is somewhere maybe $1.75. Mm-hmm. Plus or minus. So $3 copper is a very robust price.
And, you know, it wasn't all that long ago. In fact, you wrote this in one of your musings report that it was only back in December of 2008 that copper was sitting at just under $1.30 a pound. So it certainly moved
a long way. Well, and that's not sustainable because copper production comes off the market. Simple supply-demand fundamentals.
Okay. Given the fact that copper has moved quite substantially over a short period of time, though, and you indicate that you don't think it's sustainable, but still, we're looking at a price of over $3 a pound. It was $1.28 a pound back in December of 2008. What impact has that price movement had on M&A activity in this sector of the market?
Well, we've had a couple of recent M&As, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but this comes courtesy of John Black, who is a copper geologist I've known since we both worked for Kennecott in the late 80s. John, it so happens that the copper project I visited in southern Peru, John's the CEO, but he came up with quite an interesting chart. There's been, in a 5.5-year period when copper started to move, so we're looking January of 05 when copper went above $1.50 and never returned to that level except at the heart of the financial crisis, to May of 2010, so that's a 5.5-year period. Mm-hmm. During that period of time, copper is above $3 for 3 years, so that's greater than half the time. Within that range of time, there were 18 major mergers and acquisitions in the copper market.
Mm-hmm.
13 of those 18 occurred at greater than $3 copper. So that means that copper, when the copper price is high, is when acquisitions are done, which is counterintuitive to anything you would think.
Yeah,
there were only five major copper transactions during the low parts of the market.
Yeah, you would think You would think, Mickey, that that the strong players in the sector would be kind of on the hunt and prowl for an acquisition target when the price is depressed, when they can still afford to buy, while some of their smaller competitors on less sound financial footing might be struggling for survival.
Well, that's true, but this is the curious case of copper number two, and it makes you wonder about the people that are acquiring, the major mining companies or the Chinese that are acquiring these deposits. It may have something to do with when funding is available because, you know, these are big CapEx projects and you got to get financial institutions behind you. I should also point out that 10 of the 13 occurred in a 14-month window. What we've seen lately is two recent examples of major merger and acquisition activity in the copper sector. And so I'm thinking maybe this relatively short window of opportunity is right now.
Okay, well, let's end it on that note, Mickey. Looking ahead to the next show, though, good golly, it's Molly. That's our focus next week, isn't it?
That's good. Isn't that a Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels song or something from the late 60s?
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, we're going to talk about Molly, what a tease she is. She is the most fickle metal on the planet. So far, all our commodities talks about been about metals that I love and analyze and like to invest in, and Molly's 180 degrees from that.
Okay, look forward to our next conversation. Mickey, we'll connect with you in a few weeks.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Good talk to you once again.
Okay, that's Mickey Folt, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.